listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up? It is the Forza Podcast. It is Tuesday, May 12th. It's your boy, Marsh. I'm here. I'm ready. I'm back in the frickin' game. As always, I'm joined by Jordan Nelson, my wonderful and my wonderful... Who are you? I just got so pumped up, I forgot who you are. Co-host and producer, Jordan. What's up, man?
Oh, that was the best introduction I've ever had. So
I tried to get really excited, and then my mind got all discombobled. And
that's all good, dude. Things are good here, man. Things are good, busy, just living life, I guess. Can't complain.
You got some beautiful weather here in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, we do. It's, dude, this is my, like, arguably my favorite time of year that's not related to sports. I mean, obviously fall is amazing because of all the sports, but early summer in Salt Lake is prime.
There's like a certain smell, you know? Yep. The trees or the grass. And one thing that Utah has is that we have great grass. Like, you go to South Florida, Miami, the grass is disgusting. It makes you itch. You feel like you got termites crawling up your spine. But here, Utah has incredible grass. And in the summertime, everything smells good. Yeah. And right now, it's like not 95. It's not 100 degrees yet. So.
And everything's still green. You know, by like July, everything's dried out because we don't get a lot of rain.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could still see a little snow on the mountains and everything.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it's perfect.
Yeah, it's perfect. I might just go skip around the block after this.
Yeah, dude. I have a spot up Little Cottonwood Canyon. So, I mean, that's like 20 minutes from where I live. And it's like, you know, you're essentially up by a ski resort. So you're way up in the mountains.
Yeah.
And this time of year, there's like a creek that runs down the canyon. And, like a lot of it is like fresh snow melt. So it's like, it's pretty heavy running a creek right now. So dude, I've just been living up there. Cause the water is just roaring, you know?
Yeah. Haven't done anything. I haven't been doing anything. I just had to go to the freaking doctor's office and like they made me wear a mask and I couldn't breathe in that thing. They're trying to kill me. I'm sitting there in the freaking waiting office for like 30 minutes and I can't breathe.
Oh man, dude.
Ridiculous.
You wear glasses? You wear glasses sometimes, right?
I wore glasses like from first grade up until like right before I graduated high school.
Okay. Yeah, so dude, when I wear these masks, it just blows like hot air up into my glasses and fogs them up, and I cannot stand it.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
These damn masks. This nurse put it on my face. Thought she was trying to like a hit job for the mob or something. She was trying to take me out.
Sounds kind of seductive, actually.
Yeah. We talked.
What up?
Yeah, what's up? How about this health?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we got a ton of stuff to get to, and we got two guests coming on the show. First one is our good friend, Brad Tejada. So let's get him on the phone. What do you say, Mr. Nelson?
Let's do it, man. Brad, what's up, dude?
What up, what up, what up?
Yo, yo, yo. We got Brad Tejada, good friend of the program, back on the show. What's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Dude. No good. Good to have you back on, man.
As good as we can be doing right now.
Brad, you there?
Some rivals not having some good news, so that's also good. But how's everything going with y'all?
It's good. It's good. I mean, I can't go out of the house, which is not that bad. I don't mind it, but I'm kind of getting worried that there's going to be no football season. I don't know.
Yeah, man. It seemed like we were taking on a turn of good news, like maybe about what, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. It seemed like things were starting to pick up, and now with this second wave of everyone coming back out in their cities and states, it seems like we could be slowing down again. I'm not sure about this.
Well, LA, the Los Angeles, that big city, they just announced that they're extending the stay-at-home order for like 3 more months.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. Yeah, I did not hear that.
September.
So I mean that would include the universities too, I imagine, right?
Yeah. Oh, dude, I don't think there's gonna be like classes on campus in the fall. I don't think so at all.
So here's my thing to you guys. I mean, let's start off a little bit exciting. If there is no college football this year, I mean, we would probably not see Brevin Jordan or Greg Russo anymore. Possibly not Quincy Roche, but I would imagine at this point, De'Arik King comes back and you're looking at De'Arik King's first game in a Hurricane uniform against Alabama.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Oh, well, boy.
I actually think we'd get Quincy Roche back, too. I don't think he'd leave if he doesn't have to.
I wouldn't mind that.
Well, I mean, yeah, think about it. Like, he came to Miami. He stayed, like, an extra year to improve his draft stock because he wasn't going to be, you know, good enough to go, you know, in the first two rounds. And so you'd have to think that he would strongly consider coming back for 2021. He'd probably be like 30 years old by then, but
yeah. I think the NFL would change the rules a little bit. I could see like one of two draft scenarios happening where either one, they just cancel the draft and they just put everyone on hold, you know, and they say that this year doesn't count. So if this is your third year out of high school, you have to do another one, that type of thing. Just cause it would mess up like the rookie classes and, you know, all that type of stuff. The numbers would be weird. Or they could do something kind of like baseball where it's like, if you get drafted, well, actually I guess that's not like baseball. They could do something where it's like, they just have like a free draft. And if you get picked, then you can choose to go into the NFL or back to college. And if you go back to college, then it like nullifies that pick. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of like a, I don't know. That probably wouldn't work either. But
I was gonna say at this point, man, it seems like any scenario someone brings out, it almost like there's some loophole where it's like, nope, that's not gonna work. Yeah. So it's gonna be real interesting. No
players.
Yeah. It's gonna be interesting.
Okay, well let's get into some business. I mean, the past week has been like just a whirlwind of crap and good things happening. I'm trying to figure out where we should start. Let's start with Isaiah Walker. We got him!
Dude, I mean, I'm talking about a huge landing. This is our number one offensive lineman target for last recruiting cycle that we just passed on. I mean, Ryan Rodriguez, Seymour, I mean, Coach Justice. This could be the best offensive line recruiter we've had ever. I don't know too many other guys within 3 months could land three out of the top five top offensive linemen in South Florida. I mean, the guy's getting the job done.
I mean, he's done more in, what, 3 or 4 or 5 months than the previous, like, two or three head or offensive line coaches did in their entirety at Miami.
Dude,
like he's making Butch Berry look like a little choir boy.
what I'm a little upset about is, I mean, I just wish we had him just a year ago. I mean, imagine what Coach Justice would have done with the last cycle that we just had. I mean, you talk about, we probably would have landed Isaiah from the beginning. You talk about a kid like Martinez who grew up in South Florida and he leaves out of state, I believe. Then you have Mincy. You got Jonathan Dennis. You got Doomerville. I mean, these are all top guys in South Florida that even if we landed one or two more of those guys, you're talking about two deep at every position on the offensive line already.
Yeah. Well, and then I was reading something really amazing. So I was reading the Miami Herald, their like first team, like 8A, first team all Dade County. And on that offensive line is Lawrence Seymour, Isaiah Walker, and Ryan Rodriguez, and we got all three of those guys, including Michael McLaughlin and Jalen Rivers. Like,
I'm very impressed, man. Very impressed. I mean, obviously, we're not gonna get the guy like a Marcus Tate. Obviously, he's obviously gonna go Clemson. But I mean, even seeing him send out offers to kids like a Carson Hensman, who is like that Wisconsin type of offensive line, being able to see him offer these 6'8", 6'9", guys who fit like that Iowa, Wisconsin type of offensive lineman, just to see that we're actually offering the right type of guys now, and we're offering them early and not waiting to the last minute. I mean, it's a heck of an improvement, and I think we're going to see an even bigger improvement once football starts and we get some W's under our belt.
Who would have thought that if you
were offering... feeling about Isaiah?
Say that again, Marsh.
Jordan, how are you feeling about Isaiah?
Oh, I love it, dude. I mean, last week I was saying that, you know, like I'm pumped if we get Jared Williams too, but I was saying that Isaiah Walker is my priority. And that even, you know, like if we have to use up a spot for next season, do that too, because I mean, like Brad said, he was the top guy on our board. And if he has to sit out a year, then we're getting a 19-year-old with a spot for next year rather than an 18-year-old. So I don't care if we're using a spot from next year. I was 100% all aboard the Isaiah Walker train. I'm pumped for it.
Dude, I knew he was going to be a Hurricane. I knew it last summer. I just had a feeling. And then I knew he was not going to last with the Gators. And did you guys see his tweet on Saturday night?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We need to, like, have that, like, sculpted outside of Hard Rock Stadium.
He was excited, man.
He wants to be a Hurricane. You could just tell.
100%. I mean, he lasted in Gainesville for a month. I mean, I've lasted here for over 10, 15 years now, and I don't blame him one bit. I mean, he went to the Cheesecake Factory probably 3 times already, got bored of that, went to the Bass Pro Shop. I mean, there's only one mall here, so with this quarantine, it's closed. I mean, all the snow bunnies in town are out of town at the moment, so he probably didn't have much fun here.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Dan Mullen's wife tried to put the moves on him, and he just skedaddled on down here.
Oh, yeah, if it wasn't for the mask, she probably would have gave him the corona.
Yeah, she moves quickly. She's like a shapeshifter.
Hey. Nah, man, but like I think the Jared Williams thing, what we were just talking about with the taking the extra spot, I think a lot of us were kind of confused at first as far as like, hey, are we able to get Walker and Williams? Like, will it fit in our class? And the one thing I was always questioning, and I'm still questioning this, I'm trying to dig deeper into this, but we have this weird random number every year where it's like 25s our cap limit every year for our cycle. But then you look at teams in the SEC and the ACC, and they're taking up to 28, 29 kids every class. Where are those 4 or 5 extra guys that we're allowed to get? I mean, it seems like we're having to pick and choose wisely at this point, where even a kid like, I'm sure you guys are about to bring this up, but even a kid like Baby Tua, I don't think that's one of those guys that you necessarily go after right now and risk that extra guy for next class. If you're already going to do that with Jared, then you're talking about only having 23 spots left for next cycle if we go after Jared and Baby Tua.
So let me get this straight, just so we can clear it up. We can theoretically get both Jared Williams and little Tua.
Correct, but it would each guy would count for a 2021 class recruit. So our limit for next year is 25, I believe. So if you add Jared, which hopefully we get him. Last I've heard, it's between us and Baylor, and Florida State has jumped a little bit higher in the mix. I believe he's not going to make his decision till the end of the month, now that I'm hearing. But if he comes on board, that drops us to 24 guys. Then if we end up going after Baby Tua, that drops you to 23. My theory is, if we're going to have football this season, don't worry about Baby Tua. Only lose the one guy and put all your eggs in one basket for this season. We all know that this is Manny Diaz's year. This is make or break for Manny Diaz. If he is the right guy, if he's the head coach, if he's going to take us to that next level, we have to be ACC Coastal champs this coming season. Yeah. So if we are that and we end up exceeding expectations like we all hope, we could end up getting a better quarterback to fit Rhett Lashley's system and not have to worry about only working with 23 guys. Now we have 24 guys we could work with. Does that make sense?
It does.
But I'm not sure I totally agree. I mean, you bring up some really good points. But the way I see it is, like, you know, if you're looking around and you think Talia Tagovailoa is better than if you think he's better than Miller Moss or that kid that was a Virginia Tech commit or the Aaron McLaughlin, or is that the kid's name from Georgia?
Yeah.
Yes. You know what I mean? If you like him better, like, I don't really care that he only has 3 years. I say you get him. You know, because you're going to have Tyler Van Dyke with 4 years left. And, I mean, let's be real. We're only, what, 4 months away from our quarterback room being completely abysmal.
Think about that quarterback battle next year, though. If we did get whatever the hell his name is, Tengava, whatever. But if we got him, Van Dyke, and Cozy all battling it out for the starting job, But I do think if Tagovailoa does come to Miami, I think we may see Cozy and Martell transfer.
Yeah,
absolutely. See, my thing is, I hope he ends up going to like a FAU, FIU, or worst case scenario, we don't have football this year, and he could come in as a walk on and earn his scholarship the following year, and he could actually earn that scholarship. And he could still be counted towards the 2021 class, but instead of giving it to him right up front, why not let him earn it?
Yeah, I mean, what it all comes down to me is if Rhett Lashley watches the tape and says, that's the dude that I want, and correct. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it all comes down is he the better prospect than Aaron McLaughlin or Miller Moss, or I can't think about what that kid that was Virginia Tech.
You're talking about Desmond, right?
Davis.
I mean, here's the other, I'll give you a scenario though, Jordan. What if Miller Moss ends up saying, you know what, I'm going to go to USC. What does that do for Garcia? What if we're back in the mix?
We talked about this last week's episode, because both of them are not going to go to USC because, yeah. I mean, they're both going to a school to be the, you know, the future guy. And I have you guys watched, I can't think of his first name, but the Monroe kid from Texas, he's committed to Texas.
Is it?
I don't know what the hell his name is.
Milrow.
Milrow. Yes.
Yeah, Milrow.
That's the only one I've heard of.
Yeah.
He's a baller.
Yeah. Yeah. That's who Endo Gaines was telling us about last week, or Cole.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a good prospect, but yeah. There's just something about that. Have you guys watched tape on Tua's little brother?
Yeah, it didn't really pop for me, really. I mean, not that he's bad, but a lot of what I saw.
And that's the thing that pisses me off on Twitter, like when we bring up the subject, people go like, oh, he's not good at all. I'm like, what do you mean he's not good at all?
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to say, I mean, idiots?
I mean, I watched the kid's tape. He's not that bad at all. But I mean, me personally, I'm putting all my faith in Rhett Lashley, man. I mean, Rhett Lashley has said and done all the right things, where I'm putting all my faith in him, and whoever he ends up deciding that we're going to get, I'm going to agree with him regardless, because I think the way he uses his system, as far as the quarterback and the running back and the receivers, along with the offensive line, I think you're going to see a night and day thing where any of these quarterbacks we end up getting, man, I mean, the offense is now our strong suit, guys. Like, we've wanted this for forever, and now you're talking about our whole offensive staff is hitting on all cylinders, it seems like, with recruiting, where we're actually not only getting top guys, but we're in the mix for a lot of these guys that are also having Ohio State, Tennessee, LSU. I mean, you got staffs like Tennessee and Minnesota that are, I mean, killing it in recruiting right now. And the fact that we're still in contention for some of these guys that are also having those teams involved says a lot just on our offensive staff being there for 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's pretty much the point I was trying to make, is that, like, I don't think we should worry about the scholarship numbers for next year. I think, you know, I trust Lashley. Like you said, I have 100% confidence in him, and I think he should, whoever he thinks is the best prospect that we can get should get the scholarship. If that means that it's Talia and we have to take from next year, so be it. If he's the best dude, I want him.
Can't you just see, though, like, little Tua coming to the Canes? Like, it just seems like such a thing that would happen to Miami. Like, his brother gets drafted to the Dolphins, and now his little brother, who apparently I've seen his tape, like, yeah, it doesn't, like, come out at you, but he's a definitely, like, strong arm, like, talented kid. Imagine the hype around UM if we got Tagovailoa. And I honestly do think we're going to get him.
Yeah,
I think we're getting him and Jared Williams.
Yeah, I do too, actually. That's if I had to make a prediction right now, I'd say that we get both. So my issue with Talia's tape, it's, you know, like we've already established, he's not bad by any stretch. And he does have a strong arm. My worry is that almost every play is him throwing it within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, which makes me worry that his coaches know something that we don't.
Yeah,
because everything is bubble screens or, you know, throwing to running backs out of the backfield or slants or something like that. I mean, that's the bulk of his tape.
My thing is, I'm not even worried about a future quarterback. And I need to see De'Arik King throw some footballs in a Miami Hurricane uniform when it matters on the field, because I'm tired of seeing this guy's highlights practicing, because they're phenomenal. Every time the ball comes off this guy's hand, it's like I'm seeing stars and rainbows and Skittles fall down. And I need to see De'Arik King play football in a Hurricane uniform. And as long as he does and we have football, I think the sky's the limit as far as future quarterbacks. I think we could get someone even better if all things work out.
Yep.
Who's to say if we win 10, 11 games, win the Coastal, who's to say that we don't have a shot at Jake Garcia? Who's to say? I mean, Miller Moss is back in contention. Like, those kids, like, they can see, they'll see what Rhett Lashley, and no program has had a more dormant offense for the past few years than Miami. And if Rhett Lashley can come in here and make a productive offense, what quarterback wouldn't want to come here?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's an extra year where we're going to have to sit and wait. But I mean, our offense is going to look spectacular. The only thing I'm now worried about is we're having all these elite guys on staff, in my opinion, now on offense, where the defense is starting to look a little suspect. It's a little worried to me that our best defensive staff guy, along with recruiter, is Banda. And Banda, I mean, Banda's, yeah, he's gotten Jaquan, he's gotten Redwine, he's gotten Jenkins and Carter in the NFL, but a lot of these guys that he so-called landed were kind of falling in his lap. I mean, Tay was all Ed Reed, in my opinion. Gervin Hall doesn't come if Carter isn't here. And then you got Keontre didn't really have many options, so Miami was the best deal for him. And then Bubba only came because Brevin and Tate. So I'm looking at our staff on defense, and let's say we don't play this year and we have a whole nother year of offseason where we have to recruit even tougher. The defensive side of the ball, I don't see many prospects left that are higher than a 3-star that we have a chance with right now.
Yeah, and especially at cornerback.
Yeah. Which
is, and no disrespect to the guys we got committed right now, but I mean, I mean Rumpf has got to like, and I'm a Rumpf fan. I'm a Rumpf fan. I won't bash him or anything, but he's got to pull something out of his hat, like, and go after someone big and, like, kick his, like, we need to kick ass into gear, like, with recruiting. Because, I mean, I personally think that I kind of want, like, what we just did with the offensive staff to happen on the defense, just, like, fresh start almost.
Yes.
I think it's time for that. I mean, I like Banda. Like, he's okay recruiting, you know, whatever. But I think it's just time for a fresh start, man. Like,
And I think that's what's going to make me the most upset if we don't have football this season. I think this was the year to where we figure out if we need a whole new fresh start on not only defense, but as a head coach. Is Manny and his guys the right people to run the University of Miami football program? Because we see on the offense what he's done. And like we've been talking about, in 3 or 4 months, we have made huge strides and differences on a side of the football that we were 20 years behind. And now all of a sudden, we are right up there with everyone else. So why can't we do this with the defense? As long as we've been productive the past 3 or 4 years, where are we missing? And obviously it's coming down to recruits, because there's tons of South Florida guys that are just leaving to go to either Nebraska or Minnesota. I mean, I saw you and a few others excited about maybe Hood joining, but I'm going to tell you, Hood is gone, in my opinion. I don't think we get a guy like Hood.
No, he's going to, I think he's going to Michigan or maybe Minnesota, but he's a guy that should be a Miami Hurricane, but I just don't think it's going to happen. And who would have thought that we would be like worried about our defensive recruiting and our defensive staff? Like,
well, dude, hindsight is 2020, man, but we should have bailed on Rumpf after he lost Josh Jobe. Really?
Yeah. I mean, luckily some of the guys that we were all hurt that he missed on that were elite guys in South Florida, some of them haven't panned out. I mean, you just mentioned Josh Jobe, Tyson Campbell's another one. I mean, who knows how they would have panned out in Miami, but I mean, these are guys in your backyard, guys that you've coached. I mean, that you've known since Little League. Why are we missing on these guys? It almost seems like if you're not from the Saban tree, it's like it's impossible to recruit and feel like you're going to get who you want. I mean, look at Kirby, look at Loxley, look at Mario Cristobal, and now Pruitt at Tennessee. These guys are getting who they want.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what the hell is happening at Tennessee, but something's fishy.
Bags. That's like classic. What year was it that Ole Miss did that randomly? And then
I was just about to say that. 13, yeah. It was 13.
It's the exact same thing. I guarantee you in like a year and a half that they're going to do some like FBI sting on this on this recruiting class. And Pruitt's going to get canned, and then he's going to end up at Western Kentucky and just coach in, you know, Division II for the rest of his life.
Like, how does Terrence Lewis go to the – like, how does he go to Tennessee?
I mean, he's had some backstory. I mean, there's a lot of schools.
Yeah, I've heard that he's there's a few more details, but
– yeah. So, I mean, people talk about us, you know, not getting good recruits till we're successful. You know what's a big program that's been down longer than us? Tennessee.
Tennessee, yeah. Absolutely.
Tennessee is like a redneck version of the Hurricanes.
But here's the thing, I will definitely admit, Tennessee cares about football. I mean, that is one college town, one program, the fans, everyone cares about college football, where I don't think Miami is there yet. Unfortunately, Miami is one of those places, especially being in South Florida, where people don't really care about you until you're already winning. Or until you almost pretty much got the golden ticket. I mean, you look at the Miami Heat. People didn't start coming around until we got LeBron and Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I consider Gainesville the South. I mean, it's SEC country. I've lived in the South. Like, it's just different there, man. Like, Tennessee could be 3-5, and they could still get 90,000 people into Neyland Stadium. Miami, like, we're lucky if we get 50,000. Like, yeah. And nothing against like Canes fans, but like, that's just how Miami sports fans are. Like, why would I like go to Hard Rock Stadium and if they're not good, like, there's just too many other things. I'll watch it on my couch. It's 100 degrees. And Tennessee, like, they don't care. They just care about football. That's what I love the South, man. I love it.
Yeah.
I wish our fan base was more like that, but
I do too.
That's why I don't like when people give me crap for not being from Miami. It's like, dude, the stadium never even gets full. Like, don't give me crap. I don't care that I'm not from there.
The person who's giving you crap doesn't even go to the games.
Yeah. I tell you what, man, the stadium might not get full, man, but any of my friends that I have brought from Gainesville to come up to a game or come down to a game, sorry, and when they experience the tailgating, I mean, the tailgating is like no other at a Miami Hurricane football game. I mean, the love that you get, even if you're not a Hurricane fan. I mean, the smell of the churrasco and the lobster tails
and cigars.
The sound of the Trick Daddy music, and you got Kane's Cartel. I mean, the Slotsky shots. I mean, it's an amazing atmosphere, man. I could
smell a tailgate in the Orange Lot right now. I just smell cigars, and it's just like a family friendly version of Tootsie's.
Yes.
Tailgates are just dirty.
Yeah.
They're crazy. Like, you should going to a Utah Utes tailgate, or even like a team out west, like a USC, and then going to a Canes tailgate. It's like, Yeah. And we're probably not even going to get tailgating this year, but whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, well, I'll be tailgating in my heart. I'm gonna tailgate my parents' backyard. I'm gonna put on my straw hat and a Hawaiian shirt and just grill up some sausages and, you know, down a whole sleeve of Diet Dew while I'm poolside.
We just need football, fellas. That's all we need. I don't care if I have to watch it off of TV or not. I need De'Aaron King. I need Rhett Lashley. I need these guys on the football field.
We've waited so long for this. Like, it has to happen. If it doesn't happen, I genuinely think we're cursed.
Oh, 100%.
Like, there's some bad voodoo if we're not able to play football this year.
Yeah, so I got a quick question for you guys. What are the odds? So, yeah, 1 to 10, that doesn't make sense. What are the odds that we end up next season with Rhett Lashley as the head coach and Garen Justice and Rob Likens as co-OCs? Or not next season, but the following year.
Wait, repeat that?
Okay, so after next season, if Manny gets canned, that we end up with Rhett Lashley as the head coach, and then we just have, like, Justice and Likens as the co-offensive coordinators.
Bro, I've been saying this. I really do think Rhett Lashley is going to be the head coach of the Miami Hurricanes.
I wouldn't mind it.
He's just him, Likens, and Justice, they're just, like, I feel like so many Miami, like, assistants and coaches have just been, like, kind of the same over and over and over again. Like, these guys are just different. Like, yeah.
Dude, the energy that they brought into this program has just completely reinvigorated it after a crappy season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can't go 6-7 and then have the off season that we've had without having these kind of guys and that kind of attitude. Like, you could say whatever you want about Manny Diaz as a head coach, but the hiring of Rhett Lashley, I think, will be one of the most important hires, like, that the University of Miami has made since, like, in 20 years.
Yeah.
And I'll go further. I think that's the biggest hire that Manny Diaz has probably ever made in his career as a head coach so far. Because if you think about it, I mean, he is now all focused on the defense now because Rhett Lashley actually knows what he's doing. He's done this before. And he's got the right guys around him, like we're seeing. So, I mean, if we have football this year, this is Manny Diaz's make or break year. I mean, yeah. it's either we're successful and he stays, or we're not and he gets canned. And like you guys said, I think I wouldn't mind Rhett Lashley as a head coach, but where I'm more worried is if we perform really well in offense, which I think we will, I could see a few NFL teams calling Rhett Lashley as well.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Uh-huh. Really. Dude, if it's not Lashley, what we need to do is we just need to round up all the millions of dollars that we could possibly find in Miami and Mario. Just go Godfather offer to Mario.
Need Mario. 100%.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad if, you know, Urban Meyer came, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Dude, we need Mario Cristobal as the head coach. Keep our same offense. Have Manny Diaz as DC and then get new guys around him. And instead of the turnover chain, we're going to have Cafe Bustelos, Cafe con Leches. I mean, we're going to have it all. We're going to be the Hispanics of college football. They're going to have to make a whole month after us.
We'll be drinking Cavacito on the sidelines after an interception.
Oh, dude. I'm with it.
I love it. I love it. Well, hey, Brad, thank you so much for coming on, brother. We love you, man. And, hope you and your family are staying safe, bro.
You guys as well, man. I appreciate it again. Like I said, happy to be on. And you guys stay safe out there. Go Canes.
Thanks, man.
Go Canes. Go.
Cool, cool. Love having Brad on, dude. He's dude, we have a penchant for great guests named Brad.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how that other Brad is doing.
Well,
our tall friend Brad, our best friend Brad.
He's probably hanging out in his Miami penthouse with his Swedish girlfriend and his Hollywood contract, so I'm sure he's fine.
And Braxton Berrios just like in the other bedroom, just taking a nap.
Yeah, I'm sure he's doing okay.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, well, is our second guest ready to come on?
Yeah, he is.
Sweet.
Yeah, let me give him a call.
What's happening?
What's going on? What's going on? We now welcome on Kappa Kane on the show. He is a writer with me over at the State of the U. What's going on, man?
Another day in paradise.
Another day in paradise. Another day in paradise. How's this quarantine treating you?
Quarantine's been good, man. I've been in my kitchen a lot, cooking. Fat Boy Eats, hashtag on Twitter.
I've been seeing those pictures on Twitter. What's your go-to thing that you – what's, like, your best thing that you cook?
Wow, probably ribs. I mean, I can cook anything. I like to experiment, you know, different meals, different sides. So cooking
you have a Traeger? Do you have a Traeger or a smoker?
No, I have a gas grill, and I use some wood pellets with that. And I get the smoke flavor. It's not a real smoker, but, you know, it improvises.
Yeah, it does the job. Okay, well, there's a ton of things going on with the Canes right now. There's two things I kind of want to start with. I'm just going to start off with this. Okay. Jared Williams, offensive tackle from Houston in the transfer portal, and we also got baby Tua, his little brother. What are your thoughts on that? Who do you think we should go after? What are you thinking?
Short answer, yes. I think them both. You know, there's always a way around things in college football. So from what I'm understanding, there's the opportunity to bring Williams in under a 21 scholarship. Essentially, he'd walk on, and the first day of practice, they would immediately make him scholarship. That's the way around NCAA scholarship limits that have been, you know, the cap that's been put on teams. And, you know, having a tag in the family would never hurt us. But, you know, it's my understanding a lot of people don't really care for him. They think he's overrated, et cetera. He comes from a good lineage. The kid was a 4-star. I believe Roman Kane did a breakdown. Our fellow writer did a breakdown earlier today on him. And he seems to be happy with his arm strength and his accuracy. So I'd take them both, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't understand everyone's, you know, hesitation and just kind of like waving off Tua Viloa. Like, I mean, kid has a really good arm. Do you think that he could come in and compete for a starting job in 2021?
I think he does have the ability to do it. You know, there's no guarantees, you know, beyond this year. And even with this year, if we even have a season, of who's going to be the one to step up. You know, Jaren Williams is going to be on his way out if he hadn't left already. Cozy Perry, TVD, Matoka, you know, who else do you really have? So you got a handful of guys.
Martell.
Yeah, well, you know how that is. I don't think he's ever going to get a shot at quarterback, to be honest with you, not at Miami. For whatever reason, it didn't work out. And, you know, he seems to be a team player for the most part, wanting to contribute any way he can. But taking those, you know, extended absences, et cetera, during the season, that kind of hurts inside the locker room. So
yeah, that was definitely a rough time.
Yeah. And we don't know what, you know, attributed to that. It could have been something completely legitimate that was non-football related, or it could have been him throwing a tantrum. You know, I don't have any insight into what that was, but the coaches seem to accept it and allow it. So, you know, who am I to argue?
Yeah. It might have just been Kiki Paso, his girlfriend, just saying, hey, we need to go on a vacation right now. Who knows?
If that was the case, I'd be upset because,
you know,
I'm a football fan first.
Absolutely. You know, I'm a Tate stan. You know, I love Tate. And you're right. It might not work out. But just for the record, like I heard some secondhand stuff, so take it with a grain of salt that it was fairly legitimate, you know.
Okay.
But you know, who knows? We'll see what happens with Tate. I'm very excited about Tyler Van Dyke though, so I'm not gonna complain if Tate isn't the guy next season.
Right. Well, you know, I've been posing the question to quite a few of my buddies online. You know, who's your starting quarterback versus Bama? Because yeah. King's going to be gone. And, you know, yeah. everybody's, for the most part, saying Perry. You know, we've seen that show before.
Hope not.
And, not to say that he's not a good kid or a decent football player, but, you know, hopefully he gets in there with Rhett and he can show him a thing or two and I guess give him the confidence that he needs because he seems to have all of the physical skills and attributes, but he seems to doubt himself at times and he makes some mental mistakes there that end up costing us. You know?
Yeah, he's just been so up and down that it's just so frustrating. I mean, you look at him like his 2018 against Florida State. I mean, he led that comeback. And then this past year, like when we're at Pitt, he's just the worst quarterback, you know, you've ever seen. I personally think I actually have him starting against Bama again in 2021.
Really?
I do. I really do. I think he's going to flourish in Rhett Lashley's offense. I think this system really fits his skill set. I think it's kind of similar to what he did and what he ran in high school. But I'm hearing really good things about Tyler Van Dyke as well. I mean, we've all hyped him up to be the, you know, the savior and the next big time thing at Miami. So I think it's going to be a hell of a quarterback competition, especially if we get Tagovailoa as well, which I do think we do.
Yeah, I've said this a few times, but it's not that I dislike Cozy. I just feel kind of like what you were saying, Cap and Kane. Like I feel like we've seen that before. You know, if he proves me wrong, if Rhett Lashley kind of unlocks his potential, and he comes out and balls out for us, like I'll be the happiest guy on the planet. But I will be less confident going into that Bama game if Cozy is the starter. I feel like we know what we have with him, and it's not something that we can win big with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll say this. I love the kid. You know, I know him. Known him for a few years now. I don't have anything against him, you know, personally or as a football player. It's just, you know, we've seen him play, and as you mentioned, he's kind of shrunk at times in key moments. And, you know, in all fairness, he hasn't had the most support from his offensive coordinator or his quarterback coaches. Hopefully third time will be a charm for him. You know, I'd love to see him flourish. If he's the guy that we roll out, you know, against Bama, I'll be rocking a number 5 and screaming, you know, at my television. But, if we have, I've seen, you know, a TVD at Paradise Camp, and he threw the ball really well. You know, he has a lot of confidence. You know, he got the guys that were participating in the Paradise Camp with him, you know, heavily involved. He threw a lot to Darnell Washington, which I was hoping, you know, would have worked out for us. But,
is the left tackle at Georgia now?
Yeah. Defensive lineman or whatever they're gonna make him.
Darnell's film at Paradise Camp. I had never seen anything like that.
I agree. You know, and I was in awe of his stature, man. That kid was bigger than Shockey. He was bigger than Njoku. He was bigger than, you know, our current tight ends. So he's a physical freak, you know, and I wish him the best. You go up against T. Hartley, man. That guy's an assassin on the trail. So, you know, to lose to him is not a bad thing per se.
That's a good.
Wish we were able to keep him, but you know, I understand the clean break on offense, and hopefully this rendition that we feel this year would be better than the last couple.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so moving on to that big time transfer portal addition to the Hurricanes, offensive lineman Isaiah Walker. I'm hyped about it. I always thought he was going to be a Hurricane, and I know everyone else is really excited to you know, bring him to Miami. He's a Miami kid. He's from New Orleans. You know, Eric Flowers, Duke Johnson, maybe he's the next in line. What are your thoughts on Isaiah Walker? Do you think he you know, could crack the starting lineup this year? What do you think of him coming to Miami?
First and foremost, I don't know if he's going to be eligible this year. Whether or not he'll get a waiver will remain to be seen, but you know, he's a gifted, skilled, big. So anytime you can land one of those, that's a plus for your program. I think he's going to come in and make the room better, if nothing else. make the competition on Green Tree better, and hopefully push the guys that are in front of them to try and step their game up. You know, we haven't been lacking skilled players. We've been lacking offensive linemen and an offensive scheme that works for our athletes. So to have another guy that's you know, mobile, flexible, he can get in there and you know, clear holes for folks, that's always a plus. And I'm happy to have him. I'm not necessarily happy with the way it happened, you know. He should have picked this to begin with, but it's, you know, every kid has their own decision to make. I've been through that process with my own son, and it's very time-consuming and very stressful, you know. So to have family and friends and everybody telling you where you need to go play, I hope he's found his final home and is able to get acclimated to the program.
Yeah, man, I'm with you. I'm pretty pumped about him. What do you think about Jared Williams?
I don't know a lot about him other than, you know, he was a good player at Houston for them. The level of competition is certainly different in the ACC. Not that we're superior per se, but, you know, you got a guy that's coming in that's played with King before. He's familiar with his game. And I think that would be a great addition. I think he's got 3 years of eligibility, if I remember correctly, and would be immediately eligible to play. So that'd be huge. He's coming in, giving us some depth and some age. I'm not going to necessarily appoint him a starter, but you know, if he came in and he worked hard, I'm sure he could work his way into being one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What about Reed too? I mean,
that's an interesting situation, man.
Well, you know, he's a good kid. I know him as well. I don't know what his reasoning was for wanting to transfer initially. I suspect it had something to do with playing time, but you know, don't quote me. I'm not. That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's, you know, reconsidered and the staff has welcomed him back and the team has welcomed him back, I'm happy for him. You know, I really look forward to seeing him doing big things here. So, you know, our starting offensive line is probably going to look pretty similar to what it was last year. Mm-hmm. But I'm hopeful that with a year of, you know, struggle and stress and some, you know, mild successes here and there, that, you know, we're able to right the ship, because if we can put a serviceable line together, you know, with our stall of running backs and, you know, with the senior quarterback, some unproven young wide receivers, I think we can have a really good season.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and that that leads me to my next question for you, brother. Okay. So I don't have the website in front of me that made this prediction, but Miami is the favorite on this website to win the ACC Coastal. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's too early for that. You know, every time we've been predicted to do something grand, you know, we've fallen on our face. And I'm of the opinion, I just want to get out there and see them win. I can buy into winning an ACC, you know, Coastal down the road, but you know, that really isn't Miami's standard. Miami's standard is and has been national championships. And the only way you get to the national championship is to win one game at a time. So, you know, I think it's presumptive. I've seen some say that Virginia Tech's going to be the rise of the Coastal. I've seen some folks who said Carolina. You know, Mac Brown's recruiting his old self off over there. And it's probably up to his old tricks. But, you know, we have the most talent in our division. So there's no reason we shouldn't win the division. It just comes down to, are we a team or are we a bunch of good players?
Yeah, that's that's perfect right there, man. I mean, I want to buy in. I've bought into the hype about De'Ara King and Rhett Lashley, but I mean, just what this team has put me through the last 15 years, like it's hard to kind of get over that just like in one off season and say, yeah, we're going to go 11-1, 10-2 just because we have a quote unquote easy schedule. I say we go 9-3, 8-4. If you had a pick right now, what do you see us doing in 2020?
You know, 7-6 and then 6-7, anything is up.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, we should win at least 9 games minimum. Anything less than that, I consider the season to be a failure. Again, Manny's had time, you know, as a head coach to work in that position. The staff that he has around him is you know, competent, and it's folks that have been there for a while. You know, his coaching staff, everyone has experience. When I wrote something last year or last season about Manny, and I encouraged him to hire people who were experienced and could bring something to the table, whether they're coaches or graduate assistants or, you know, just consultants for the program. Having folks around that have, you know, been part of a championship caliber program or organization such as Ed Reed and others, you know, that brings another mindset into the coaching room, and it brings it into the meeting rooms, and it brings it out on the practice field. And everything that you do on the practice field is going to translate to the game field. So, you know, if you play hard in practice and you work yourself really hard in the weight room and in film sessions, then, you know, you're poised for success on the field. So anything, you know, under 9 wins is a failure, in my opinion, this season.
Okay, and I asked this question to a lot of the guests that we have on the show, and I want you to be honest. You know, first thing that comes in your head, do you think Manny, I'm not asking do you think he can be the guy, but do you think he is the guy for Miami right now?
First thing comes to mind is who else would be? If it isn't Manny, who else would be? I think, you know, he's a Miami guy. He certainly understands the brand. He understands the history. I think he is the guy right now. What he does this season in terms of his decision making is going to determine whether he's the guy going forward. He's got guys, like I said, that are competent, that have experience in what they're doing, and have been successful elsewhere. So, you know, the intent is for them to come here and be successful. What that, you know, level or measure of success is going to be, you know, that jury's still out. But I think Manny has at least the end of this season and potentially into next year. If things don't work out this year, they're going to be calling for his head. But I think he has until next year to right the ship and to, you know, make some real waves in college football. He's been an offseason champion for 2 years in a row. And, you know, while that brings headlines, it hasn't translated on the field. So we need to see that translation on the field. And if he's showing improvement there, I think it'll buy him some time.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly got the politicking down of being a head coach. I think, you know, he gets that from his dad, but we'll see. We'll see if there's some head coaching talent in there.
Well, I'll tell you this, the players love him.
Yeah.
And their level of adoration and respect for him, you can't get any better than that, you know, elsewhere. So hopefully they can turn that around on the field and show that love by executing the game plan that's put out for him. And, you know, it's a 22-man game. So you got offense and defense. What I've seen lacking has always been special teams. You know, your 11 on special teams are going to determine where you're starting on offense and or on defense on any given possession. And having that position as collateral duty previously with the tight end coach, last year with the linebackers coach, I don't like. I really wish we would have a set coach for that. I understand there are limitations with, you know, how many coaches we can have, but I don't think we necessarily need 3 linebacker coaches. You know, we really need to put an emphasis on that. Beamer ball, it comes to mind. You know, they won a lot of games based on how they handled themselves on special teams. And Miami has been a big special teams program. They haven't been as of late, but, you know, historically, guys like Hester and others, you know, who can really get in there and mix it up. I really would love to see the emphasis there. So a 33-man, you know, attack with 11 on offense, 11 on defense, and 11 on special teams.
Yeah, we were talking about this with our last guest that you know, it'd be nice to see some reshuffling on defense, perhaps.
What'd you have in mind?
Well, just, you know, maybe even like cleaning house on the defensive staff.
Due to recruiting or coaching or?
You know, it's kind of a mixed bag, a little bit of everything. I mean, Banda is by far our best recruiter on the defensive staff, which he's done just fine. But, you know, I don't love having his track record be easily the most successful on defense. Mm-hmm. And then we've kind of underwhelmed at recruiting at every other position, really. You know, guys like Pat Key and Rumpf, you know, come to mind is guys that are, you know, struggling to pull their weight, in my opinion.
Let me pull that string a little bit, because I don't know if your listeners know how recruiting at Miami works. They don't recruit their individual positions. So they recruit geographical areas. Mm-hmm. And they go out and they collect information on the athletes that are identified in those areas, and they bring that information back, whether it's film or discussions, things of that nature. And they talk as a team, as a coaching staff, about each of the individual kids. And they review their film together. And in order for an offer to go out, you know, they all have to agree that this kid is going to be able to help us beat Florida State. You know, and so I think a lot of fans put an unfair burden on Rump, per se, thinking that he's going out and whiffing on all these kids when he initially started, he wasn't even able to make offers. Yeah. He was a first time coach in college and was on a tight leash, you know. But when you look at his developing and his coaching style, he does a great job with the guys that he has, you know. So I want to go to bat for him. And for those who don't, you know as intricate about the program as I do, just understand there's a lot more than just, you know, one coach going out and saying, I want you, and the kid saying, yeah, I'm going to come. It's a lot deeper than that. And as far as Band is concerned, surprisingly, you know, there's been some rumblings that people don't like, you know, Banda or his recruiting style, et cetera, that we get guys in spite of him. I happen to know him. I think he's a decent guy. I think he's a good coach. If you were to get rid of either one of those guys, who would you look to bring in? You know, it's easy to identify a perceived problem, but what is the perceived solution to that? No. And that's what I would pose to listeners, you know.
Yeah, well that, right? That's a, and I've been more of a Rump fan, just because, I mean, yeah, I mean, he doesn't, we're not going to get, you know, guys like Jason Marshall, but I didn't think we were going to get, you know, that kind of guy anyway. You know, when you lose to FIU, it's not that we're not going to get those players, but I just look at his, you know, his developing over the past few years. I mean, what he did with Michael Jackson at cornerback, like, and you know what he was able to, he made Banda a really solid cornerback, and you know, Malik Young, it's hard to overlook that developing of his cornerbacks, and I think that's, it's such a sensitive subject to talk about with Canes fans, because I mean he's a national champion, like he's an all-time legend at Miami, and he really, I mean, look at his Miami's pass defense. Like the defense against the pass, like since Rump is gone here, it's not like we're one of the worst in the country. We're always like top 15, top 20 against the pass. And so I'm a little bit more on Rump's side. So I kind of agree with you on that. And Banda is, I don't know. Banda is an interesting case in Patke, and maybe it would be good to, you know, go after someone new, kind of like what they do with the offensive side of the ball. I don't want to see Rumpf get fired just because he can't land a five-star kid, but I don't know. It's that's a sensitive subject to talk about with Canes fans.
Sure. You know, and it's open to, you know, subjectivity. Honestly, people have opinions, and it's easy to say, hey, I don't like what's going on. But again, I challenge anyone, you know, go out there and find a replacement that you think, one, is better, two, is available, or willing to come, you know? And three, what does that timeline look like? I'd argue our defense hasn't been the problem the last 3 years. You know, we've been top 10 or close to it all 3 years. And, you know, we have small tweaks that need to be made. I'm happy that Manny has made changes both in year one and year two, whereas previous administrations, you'd go 3-4 years without seeing anything. I mean, we could be back in Dorito days, you know, D'Onofrio, where we were just getting, you know, the ball ran and thrown all over us, you know. I don't ever want to see that again. And if it means us having a subpar offense and a top 10 defense, I'll take that. But at the same time, you know, we have what we need to win. Can we put it all together? Simply having great players is not good enough, you know. And I'm happy for any kid that gets a chance to go to school and better his, you know, his and his family's position in life, whether it's at Miami or any other school. We're not going to get every kid. So, you know, when there's a kid that's flirting with us and then tosses the hat on the ground, I'm going to give a big F you to that kid, right? Because that's immature, and I don't want a kid like that in my program who doesn't have the maturity to say, you know what, coach, I appreciate what you're doing. I know you're under a timeline. This is a business. Here's my decision, you know, as opposed to I have a top 15. I have a top 14. I have an announcement coming. Here's my top, you know, 13. Those kids are, you know, they're lacking in maturity. And, you know, is that what you want to bring into your locker room? You know, over the years, we've had some fracturing in the locker room between offense and defense, et cetera, infighting. I'm happy to see that being rooted out, you know?
That's good.
Yeah. I mean, that you said it perfectly. Sorry, Jordan, I cut you off.
No, you're totally fine. Yeah, I mean, just to play devil's advocate, I guess, with the defense, I think, you know, you're right. The defense hasn't been a problem. It's been the rock of our team, you know, especially in 2017. You know, we were really held together by a very opportunistic defense that got to the quarterback. It forced turnovers. It, you know, it stopped the run. It played great pass coverage. But I think, at least from my point of view, there's a sense of trending in the wrong direction, both when it comes to on-field performance and the talent that's coming in on defense. Sure. I do not view our defense right now. And granted, you know, I can be proved wrong on this, because when you look at our depth chart right now, it does not look as deep of a team on defense as it has in the last few years. However, you know, if Al Blades and DJ Ivy come out and play like all ACC players, then you have to give Rumpf credit, right, for coaching them up. But just on paper, I'm worried. You know, I see a little bit of a trend in the wrong direction on defense, and I would rather make some tweaks to the coaching staff now to keep that sustained, rather than wait for the rug to be pulled out from under us and then be like, oh crap, we gotta rebuild this defensive staff now, and we're coming off a year where we are only the 48th best defense rather than the 21st.
Sure. Well, I would say this. Some of that is going to be attributed to the youth on that side of the ball. You know, we've had a tough time for whatever reason with keeping kids into their senior year. You know, a lot of guys want to declare and leave early, and for some that may be a good decision. For others, maybe not so good.
Yeah.
But, you know, that creates a void. And although Manny's winning the portal, that's also creating a void, because you're bringing in, you know, stopgap players who have a year, you know, potentially 2 years to make an impact here. And that doesn't leave much room for the guys that you're developing, that you're recruiting, to get in there and you know, really earn their stripes, if you will. You know, I wrote last year that our secondary was very talented, but was going to face some challenges because you have a lot of young guys who are trying to make plays, and they're going to get beat doing that. And that's exactly what ended up happening last year. You look at the defense this year, it's going to be somewhat similar. Our defensive line, maniacs, okay? We shouldn't have any issue leading the conference and potentially the nation in tackles for loss, you know, quarterback hurries, quarterback sacks, things of that nature with the group that we have. A lot of depth there at the tackle and at the end position. But what do you have behind that? You know, you got one senior linebacker. And then you got a bunch of guys that have been injured.
Yeah.
And a couple of young guys. You know, Brooks had the opportunity to play last year, so he'll be a good, you know, returning player. Avery, this is going to be his first year playing. You know, he's been off for a while. Had academic issues that you know, prevented him from getting in early last year to be able to participate in spring ball and stuff. So, you know, we're hopeful that Bradley can come back. But, you know, you got Zach, and that's it. You got Carter back there. You got Bolden back there. You know, you've got a lot of guys that have potential. But where is your leadership? I think we're going to lean heavily on Bubba Bolden this season for leadership in the secondary.
Yeah.
And you know, hopefully he's prepared and able, you know, to field that type of responsibility because, you know, you got a bunch of guys back there that are trying to make plays. They love the program and they're playing hard, but because of their youth and inexperience may make some mistakes.
No. And I agree with you. And I'm high on Bubba Bolden. I've been high on him since, you know, he came over from USC. I think him and also Al Blades Jr. I think they're going to be, you know, leaders of this team. And also, you know, like Zach McLeod, he just has that veteran, you know, leadership qualities that we don't really have. I mean, kind of like what you were saying, we don't have that feeling. We don't have that sense of, you know, he's the guy. And I think McLeod is going to step up and become that leader. But I also think that Bubba is going to have a really big year. And I think people are sleeping on Gervin Hall, too. I know that a lot of us at State of the U are really high on Gervin Hall. And people don't realize, I mean, he was thrust into a tough situation last year. I mean, taking over for a guy like Jaquan or Sheldrick, I mean, he had some lofty expectations and, you know, he definitely struggled, but I mean, he turned out to be a solid safety for, you know, a sophomore. And I think him and Bubba Bolden, I think their potential is sky high at the safety position as a duo.
So where do you see Carter? You think he's going to move into a striker role or stay in safety or what?
I think he should. I mean, when I was covering practice last year and I was at Green Tree and I saw Amari Carter, I was like, holy damn, like that, the dude,
Jacked.
He's a tank.
Yep.
And I think you would probably get more playing time at striker. But then, I mean, I also think Gilbert Frierson and Keontre Smith are going to be solid strikers as well. And Amari's an interesting case just, I mean, because like I said, he's athletically, he's a freak. I mean, but I don't know. He just hasn't put it together to become that, you know, that starting safety for Miami.
Wasn't there a rumor going around that he could fill in at linebacker if we need help?
I mean, people like throwing around the idea.
I'll say this. We have the dudes, right? We just need to make sure that they're in the right position to make plays. My biggest concern last year, and I'll carry that over to this year, we have a lot of guys that hit, right? We need a lot of guys that tackle, okay? Hitting is fun. It's cool. It's highlight worthy. You know, it's fantastic. However, I need guys that are able to tackle, you know, because I don't care how great your coverage is. People are still going to make plays. You know, especially getting in the higher echelon of programs, you got great athletes on both sides of the ball. Some plays go your way, some plays don't. So, you know, when you get beat on a play per se, are you going to be able to make the tackle, or are you just coming in and launching? You know, and that's been a concern, an ongoing concern of mine.
Well, I mean, look back at the Georgia Tech game last year. We lost the game because we had what, like 27 missed tackles?
Yeah, the UF game. I mean, there's too many instances to mention.
Yeah, I mean, that first touchdown for the Gators, I think every single player on the Hurricanes, like, had a shot at that guy. And we just let him go.
Yeah, well, we don't need to be playing tag. We need to be playing tackle football.
Yeah,
you know.
Wrap up.
So that'll be, you know, something that I'll be keying in terms of if we have a quote-unquote spring practice or, you know, a fall practice. How are these guys adjusting to, one, you know, playing the college game, but also making the tackles?
Yeah. Like, okay, I have one more question, and then we'll let you go. What do you think of Baker's, like, 4-2-5 defense and with a striker? Do you like it, or do you want to go back to a 4-3?
I prefer a 4-3. You know, do we have the athletes out there to do it? You know, yeah, but when you're playing some of those, you know, bigger programs, you're going to be exposed. You know, you can't put a linebacker on a running back all day and expect them to stay with them, or put them on somebody in the slot or something. Look at a tight end like ours. You know, we have Will Mallory, we have Brevin Jordan. Those guys are matchup nightmares for opposing teams. And there are kids like those on other programs that, you know, we need somebody like a Romeo Finley that can run. He's big enough and physical enough to hit a running back. He has good coverage skills, and is smart when the ball's in the air. You know, we had a lapse with my frat brother last year, DJ Ivy. You know, he watched the ball go right over his head, you know, and it pissed me off to see that. But I truly believe that was a learning moment for him. We didn't see that happen again. As a matter of fact, he came out next game and got 2 picks. You know, that shows the growth and the maturity there, the ability to let that that bad game go. I'm hopeful that translates this year as well. You know, we need guys that are smart when the ball's up in the air and are fighting for it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Great stuff. Kappa Kane, thank you so much for coming on, brother. It was awesome talking to you. You're welcome on anytime you want, and hope you and your family are staying safe out there.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you, man. And shout out to my tailgate brothers at Monster X on Twitter, at Sigma Kane 1914, and everybody that comes and parties with us, Mondo, Rob, Steve, Kane's thing. All you guys, Marsh, you need to come to a tailgate, bro.
That's what you guys have been telling me all season, that I wouldn't survive one of your tailgates.
Sure you would. Jordan, you come be his designated driver, man.
That I can do.
Brother, hell yeah. We'll make it happen. But yeah, stay safe out there, and thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, all right, guys. You. Have a good one, man. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, all right, bro. Perfect. Well, that's a good episode, man.
Yeah. I want to have him on again. I like talking football with him.
Yeah. Yeah. The geographic recruiting thing is a great point, and I actually forgot that we did that. As soon as he said it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I knew that. You know?
No, dude, I mean, I always forget about that. I mean, like, we're always just under the impression that that we go about it like how we all think we do. And Miami's just not that way. And I love having the rump debate with our guest on the show.
Yeah. I almost made a joke, but I could tell that he was more of a, you know, a rump guy, which is fine. You know what I mean? I just didn't want I didn't want to have more of an argument, but I was going to say, does that mean like Rumpf has been recruiting South America for us or something? Because I don't think he's gotten anyone.
He writes great articles. He takes great pictures for State of the U. And yeah, we need to have that guy on again. But
absolutely, he great job, dude. He's we've had a really good run of guests that are extremely knowledgeable, and Kappa Kane definitely fits that bill, man. It was great having him on. He definitely knows his stuff, and you know, even schooled us a little bit there. So
yeah, and that's what you look for in guests, man. I mean, yeah. You want people that know the game and you know, that can, you know, just shout out facts, and it makes me happy to see like some people like and I'm not calling like you or other people out, but like I'd like to see like other people having Rumpf's back. Because I've just been like just murdered on Twitter about it sometimes.
I'm just tired of it, man. I'm tired of, and I mean, well, I guess he's right in that we don't know the lowdown of how the recruiting works. But I'm kind of bugged in that we've been successful at recruiting every other position since Rumpf has been on the staff. So maybe we don't know how it works and that's coincidental. But the only constant thing there is Rumpf and less talent. And I'm just tired of that. You know, it's like, how long can you have lackluster defensive classes in recruiting before your defense is no longer a strength? I mean, that's just how it works.
I mean, I guess we're honestly like going to find out here pretty soon, because we that's kind of been like our defensive recruiting the past like few years. I mean, yeah, we got Avante Williams and Jalen Harrell and everything. But like I guess Trajan Bandy was a 4-star. But like other than that, like.
Yeah, we've
been able to live and tell the tale. But I'm honestly just waiting for that one season that it all falls apart and our defense like morphs into 2013 Hurricane defense. And
I'm really worried that that's this year though, because I mean we have question marks at every position besides defensive end. You know, our tackles are a question mark. I mean, Zach McLeod was the third best linebacker on last year's team. So what makes us think that him being the best linebacker on this year's team is like a good thing? And no disrespect to Zach McLeod, but that's just the facts, you know?
Yeah.
He was the third best linebacker last year, and now he's the best, and we're acting like it's an upgrade. I get that he has a different skill
set. It's not an upgrade. It's just another guy. And I do think McLeod is going to have a really, really solid season. And in regards to like cornerbacks and everything, we just got to freaking hope that our defensive ends get to the quarterback and,
yeah,
you know, rush a throw. That's, I say it all the time. That's what our 2017 defense did. Like, yep. I mean, our cornerbacks were, I mean, they were solid, but like, and I love Michael Jackson. He's one of my favorite Canes in the past like 5-10 years, but it's not like we had like freaking. Who's a really good cornerback? It's not like we had Jalen Ramsey back there, but like, I mean, if Jalen Phillips and Rousseau and Roche are able to get to the quarterback, you never know. Man. Chain might be coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm with you. I think McLeod will have a great year. I'm not trying to bag on him, but I'm just saying is we're seeing that type of stuff all over the defense. You know, it's that you know, our returning starters from last year were guys that were meh. You know, it's like guys that last year, to sum up their season, was like, oh, yeah, it was like they were solid at times. And it's like that's our returning defensive starters besides Rousseau. He's the only one that was like a standout guy that's coming back. Everyone else was just like, oh, yeah, they had a good game here and there. So that just really worries me. And you know, we're not bringing in the talent recruiting like the depth. You know, we're getting really great guys here and there, but we're not consistently, you know, we're not having like the kind of class that we did on offense where we're bringing in three wide receivers that can contribute early. And we're bringing in the two best running backs in Florida. And, you know, we're bringing in an incredibly athletic tight end and a 6'4" quarterback that looks like he's 31. And you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
we're not having those kinds of classes on defense, and we haven't in like 3 years. So at what point are the wheels going to come off and we're going to be like, oh, yeah, I guess you still need to recruit defense?
I don't know, man. I mean, because I agree with you, but like we haven't like hit that wall yet. I don't know how. Like, I mean, last year we definitely had the most hiccups on defense that we've had since Manny came to Miami. But
yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, we were still a top 20 defense, and we score 30 points a game, and we don't need these All-Americans at cornerback. We'll win 10 games. Like, yeah. But, I mean, I you do bring up a really, really good point about, you know, we have these guys that a lot of people just say, like, oh, yeah, they have so much potential, and nobody says this more than me. Like, but, I mean, a lot of our analysis and opinions on these players are based off of like one game or like a few drives. Like I'm a big fan of Jordan Miller, but I mean, he wasn't what did he show you last year that he's going to be like a dominant defensive tackle? Same with Nesta, man. He was really good against Florida State and he was solid in the few games before that, but like FIU shut him down.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, I think you have to look at it both ways, and I think that's a really good point by you.
And don't get me wrong. I love Bubba Bolden. Sky's limit, I agree. But, dude, he's in that category, too. And, like, we're betting on him. He's played, like, 3 games of football in the last 2 years.
I mean, he was pretty good in those games last year, though. I mean, and it wasn't – I mean, if he could have played earlier, he would have.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm a Bubba fan. Yeah. But he fits into that category that you just mentioned. You know, he in the last 2 years, he's played 3 football games and broken his ankle. So does he have the talent? And, you know, I'm confident. But, like, will it really be a shocker if he has a mediocre season?
I would be shocked.
I mean, I
would be honestly shocked. Because, like, the thing with Bolden is, like, yeah, he's only played, like, 3 games. But, like, I mean, he was really, really solid safety during those 3 games. Yeah. It's not like he's played like the whole season like some of these other guys on defense that had a good game against Florida State, who had the worst offensive line in the country besides Miami. But then, you know, they couldn't do anything against Duke and FIU. Like, I mean, but Bubba, it doesn't fall under like at least that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that could be a bit of a reach on my part because, you know, just trying to make my point. But I mean, cause I'm with you. I love Bubba. He's so talented, but I mean, I am worried that when he's one of your sure things is a guy that's only played 3 games in 2 years. And you know, it's just, dude, I just see question marks all over the defensive side of the ball and I could be wrong and that would make me happy. However, the question marks are still there. And so I do not want to be the guy. I don't want us to be the team where we get caught with our pants down and we're just like, oh yeah, we could see these problems for the last 4 years. We just didn't do anything about it because we had a top 20 defense. No. So why make a change? And it's like, well, you could tell that we weren't recruiting very well. We could tell that the roster quality was decreasing every year. We could tell that, you know, we're returning less and less experience every season. Like, you got to be on top of that. That's part of good coaching and good leadership is seeing the problems before they become a problem.
No, and dude, I completely agree with you, man. I totally agree with you because I mean, I'm really just over. I mean, obviously we have to win games to recruit better. I mean maybe we don't. We kind of actually proved the opposite this off season, but I'm just over like getting these cornerbacks the last day of recruiting just because like schools like Alabama or even Florida State didn't want them, you know? Like, why aren't we out like knocking on the door of every cornerback available? Like, I just feel like it's been so lackadaisical almost. And I'm not calling out Rumpf either. I'm like the staff knows that this is that the cornerback depth is an issue.
That's Rumpf knocking door to door in Alberta, Canada, the last week of January, asking if they have kids that play cornerback.
Have you guys ever heard of football?
Yeah.
You guys want to come to Miami?
Do you know of any defensive backs that play high school football?
Where's the nearest nickel cornerback?
Yeah, right.
Oh my God.
He's 6 feet tall though, or I don't want him.
Bro, there was I I'm a Rumpf fan. To all the listeners out there, you guys already know I'm a Rumpf fan. I think it was right before National Signing Day, like just a few months ago. And we offered this cornerback, wasn't ranked at all. Like, and he was like from like Mississippi, no disrespect to Mississippi, because that's my future home, but like, and it just caught, and everyone saw it on the timeline, and it was,
I remember that.
It was almost like a Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah.
We can't do that. Like, come on. Like, we got to get some better cornerbacks, especially in this class, because I don't know, man. I think Blades is really good, and I think he's going to have a really good season. Ivy's still up in the air. You know, Tecori Couch is supposed to be really good. But, you know, after that, I mean, Christian Williams, you know, but we're not going to be able to, like, keep sustaining this defensive success when there's two corner. I mean, the Gator game last year when DJ Ivy got suspended, I think we walked onto that game with three cornerbacks.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah, dude. That, I mean, how many do we have on the roster now? We have like five or six.
Well, Keontre moved to striker, so I don't know.
Yeah. Dude, who knows what's going to happen? I'm frustrated with our defense, though. Like, we better put up the same numbers or I'm going to be pissed.
Okay, well, yeah, you're frustrated with the recruiting of the defense, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to be mad at our defense over the
past. No, for sure. And you know, I'm on record on this podcast saying that I think Blake Baker took some unnecessary heat last year. You know, I thought he did better than people gave him credit for. But you know, the recruiting has been abysmal. So when our numbers start to dip over a year or over 2 years or maybe even 3 years, I'm going to be pretty pissed that Manny didn't nip this in the bud right now and just like fix our freaking recruiting, man.
That's why we have like an entire recruiting staff.
Yeah.
It's on Manny to win games, but like, and the thing is, like, I it's hard to even talk down on recruiting because at least on the offense we've been doing so good.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I just don't see why more like high profile players wouldn't want to come to Miami. Like, you see how good this defense is. Like, I mean, there's probably many reasons why like you wouldn't go. I mean, we have solid defensive ends in college or solid defensive linebackers in college, but they don't get drafted till the fifth or sixth round. So, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, and I don't think we're handing out the bags like Tennessee is. So, dude, those must be some hefty duffel bags that Tennessee's giving out right now.
Bro, there ain't no money like SEC money. Let me tell ya. Like,
stupid, man.
Woo!
It pisses me off.
It pisses me off because, like, if we did the same thing, the NCAA would be in our door in 7 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, Miami has money. Like, that's the thing. Miami has money. We're just not spending the money.
Well, we're spending it on education. Because if you ask our board of trustees, the E comes before the W, man. The education comes before the winning. I had to block all of our board members because I could not. They're just peddling bullcrap.
Well, I would also say to President Frank, I think that's his name, at the University of Miami, that nobody would know who the hell the University of Miami was without the football team.
It's true.
It's so true.
The
30 proved that.
This school would be nothing without the football team.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Like, yeah. Come on. Like, it's a tiny school to begin with. And, I mean, the 30 for 30, like, the first one, like, it talked about how admissions went up and freaking the school. I mean, the football team put the school on the map. Like, it brings in countless, like, so much money to the school, or used to, at least. But
if you don't play sports, you have to be a trust fund baby.
Yeah.
Or like a Saudi prince to be able to afford to go there.
Yeah, I don't understand some of these kids that go there. I'm like, you're going to spend $60,000 a year on tuition? Are you freaking out of your mind? I mean, I not like they UM accepted me anyway, but like.
Yeah, I applied too. I didn't get in.
Yeah, but it's a hard school. I'm not a brainiac.
Yeah. You know, like, but like you said, you know, if I can go to Utah State and pay $2,000 a semester for what's it called? And plus I get my, I get FAFSA. So I was paying like $700 a semester to go to college in Utah State.
Pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, dude.
Hey, I watched the Phantom Menace, by the way.
How was it?
You know what? And I know people don't care about our Star Wars talk, but I don't care. The acting is horrible. It's bad, but I think people underestimate like the storytelling.
Yes.
In that movie, like when when they find Anakin and Qui-Gon's like trying to like figure it all out, that's like, that's a really, really cool scene to me.
Yeah. I love it, dude. And oh man, there's, I could just go on and on and on. I've already, I woke up at like 5:30 this morning to read Star Wars books to work on this project. So I could go on for hours and hours, but yeah, dude, I just love the Phantom Menace. And I do think that people hold the prequels to a higher standard than the original trilogy. I mean, it's not like the acting and special effects are great in those old movies.
Are you waiting for a response from me?
Yeah, it's not good.
I love Princess Leia, man. I mean, it was the 80s and the 70s, so I mean, the effects were, you know, I could make better effects in like, I probably couldn't, but I mean, yeah, it was pretty bad, but there's just so, it's like the Lord of the Rings movies, like how The Hobbit, like they'll always be held to a high standard and they'll never ever compare to The Lord of the Rings, but that's just how it is. And The Phantom Menace does get, if Jar Jar Binks wasn't in that movie, it would be considered a classic.
the biggest thing for me, and I guess I'm going to plug myself if you don't care. So I'm working on a like an oral history type thing on Star Wars, like the Clone Wars saga, and then it's going to also be about like the Sith grand plan of how, you know, Palpatine went from being a politician on Naboo to becoming the Emperor, right? And destroying all the Jedi. So it's going to go really in depth in that. And one of the things that I'm really going to hammer is that, like, well, I guess this is apparent to me. The prequels are a different type of story than the original trilogy. And I think that kind of gets lost in translation. Because the original trilogy is all, like, it's black and white, good versus evil. There's no gray area. I mean, Luke is the good guy. He doesn't do anything wrong. And he's fighting Vader and... you know, Palpatine, who don't do anything good, right? It's pretty cut and dry. Yeah. And, you know, and you're cheering for the underdog to overthrow the evil overlords or whatever. But that's not the story of the prequels at all. Like, there isn't a good guy in the prequels.
No, they're all power hungry.
Yeah.
People. I mean, like the.
It's a dystopian,
when in the Revenge of the Sith, when Palpatine invites Anakin to that like play or something, and they're in that luxury box. Uh-huh. I don't know what the hell they're doing there, but uh-huh. I mean, he's talking about the Jedi and how the Jedi and the Sith are not that different. They just want power.
Yeah. Well, dude, and then I mean, you see it over and over and over again. I mean, what does Mace Windu say in the scene right after that, where he says that they're going to have to send a task force to, or they'll have to take control of the Senate to ensure a peaceful transition away from Palpatine?
Yeah. What
kind of peacekeepers do a hostile takeover of a political office?
Well, and like they just didn't grant Anakin the rank of master because like they're scared of Anakin's potential and that he would like just become more powerful than him. Yeah, Mace Windu screwed everything up. He sucks.
Yeah, the Jedi really play the role of being like the goody two shoes. We're innocent. We're just here to, you know what I mean, that kind of stuff. But they're just bureaucrats. You know, they're very heavily involved in the war effort. They're heavily involved in politics and policy and really kind of throw their weight around, but they don't want to admit that, you know. And then you know, people like Padme, who are all like fanboys of the Republic and stuff, or fangirl or whatever, like that's all well and good, except for that they're supporting a corrupt institution. You know, one of the details that kind of gets lost in Phantom Menace is that the reason that blockade is happening on Naboo, the Trade Federation blockade, yeah, is because the Republic broke its own laws and was illegally taxing the Trade Federation. So like them doing that was a legal protest to defend their rights. And that's kind of what starts the Civil War. Is that all these planets in the CIS, the, you know, like the bad guys in 2 and 3, right? The Confederation of Independent Systems. they declare independence because the Senate is being tyrannical, right? They're giving illegal taxes to people. They're breaking their own laws and stuff like that. And then, you know, they're what's that called when you like influence someone to do something bad? I can't think of it, but you know, they essentially goad the Trade Federation into breaking the law, and then they can like react with military and financial sanctions and whatever. And so it's not like the Republic's good. The Jedi aren't good. You know, the Separatists are being run by a Sith Lord and a droid army that's not friendly. So there aren't any good guys. And so it's just different, you know?
Yeah. It's all Palpatine, man. Palpatine is like the biggest key of the movie, like the entire trilogy.
Yeah. Like that's another thing I like. Sorry, I've been hogging. You go ahead.
No, you're good. I mean, you know a lot more than I do. I mean, it's just I love Star Wars. Love it, man.
Yeah, I think so I think when George Lucas was making the prequels, he tried to keep the same like marketable packaging of good versus evil and stuff. But underneath that surface layer, there's so much more meat to it, but it just kind of gets weirdly lost in translation, you know? Like it doesn't come off as a genuine good versus evil story because it's not. And I think it was not fair to try to package it that way.
Did you see who is going to be directing the new Star Wars movie?
It's the dude from New Zealand, right? I can't Taika Waititi.
Yeah, I saw Kaya was excited about it, so I figured he must be good.
Yeah, he's you know, I've seen a few of his movies. I know he did Thor Ragnarok, and then Jojo Rabbit was one of his movies this summer that I absolutely adored. I loved it.
I haven't seen both of those movies.
I'm not huge on Marvel movies, so I thought Thor was like solid at best. But Jojo Rabbit is really, really good. I definitely recommend it. It's a tearjerker.
That's what I heard. Did you like the Rise of Skywalker?
No, I didn't.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't like any of those three movies.
What was the second one?
The Last Jedi.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
Really awful.
Yeah. And you know, I get why people did like it. But to me, it just, I feel like they had to rewrite a lot of the stuff that had already happened. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
they had to cancel out a lot of the existing lore of Star Wars to make the Rise of Skywalker, whatever. What's it called? Is that right?
I think it's the Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, they had to cancel out a lot of previously existing stuff to make that happen. And, you know, like, if people are fine with that, or they didn't know what was canceled out to begin with, like, that's cool. I don't want to rain on people's parade, right?
Yeah.
But for me, it was just kind of heartbreaking. Like, I had much more of an emotional reaction than I'd like to admit about that.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of tacky on how they just like always did like flashbacks to like the prequels or things like that, when like they reference Vader so much, and not that that's a bad thing, like that's, he's an incredible character, but like, you know what I'm saying? They just like, it was just so tacky.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my favorite of the newest ones. I said it was good. I'm in love with what's her name? Rey.
Daisy Ridley. Yeah, she's pretty, man.
I love in her accent.
Yeah. One thing that pissed me off about that dude is that they gave Palpatine a family. Like,
yeah,
this dude has been so hell-bent on destroying an entire group of people that is tens of thousands, like eradicating them from the face of the galaxy. Like, why would you try to humanize that dude?
Yeah, and why would you, like, I just don't get bringing him back.
Yeah.
I thought it was really stupid when his fleet of what are those ships called?
Yeah, the Final Order or whatever.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that just kind of looked stupid.
Yeah. And
the more I talk about it, the more it just sounds dumb.
Yeah, there's a few nitpicky things. Like, one, like, just send it, like, I get that if you want to say that there's no shields in the atmosphere or whatever, then just send the ships out into space so you can put shields on them, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty obvious. And two, like, so I'm going back to the family thing with Palpatine. So he's willing to kill his granddaughter because she's a threat to him, right? And so if you're willing to kill your granddaughter, like, why even have kids? Like, if your family could be a liability and you're fine with killing your family, then why not kill your kid as soon as you have one?
Because he's just obsessed with the power.
Yeah, but, I mean, does that not make sense, though? Like,
oh, it doesn't make any sense.
Like, if he knows, like, okay, because I'm so incredibly powerful with the Force, and I guess the Star Wars writers have a hard-on for, you know, legacy, family legacy and lineage or whatever. So, like, him knowing that one of his children could be his biggest enemies or one of his relatives, why make any relatives? Especially if – and if you have no moral qualms about killing your relatives, then just kill all of your relatives.
Yeah. It's just like that Palpatine character is just so – like – and he brought back, like, some of his old lines, like, don't tell me because I have to do this by myself. The dark side of the Force is a pathway to many. Wait, what does he say?
I can't think of it right now, but I know what you're talking about. Is it many, shoot.
Many, some considered unnatural.
Yeah, many gifts some would consider, or powers some would consider unnatural, yeah. Something like that.
Like, it's like, you really couldn't, like, the writers of this movie couldn't come up with, like, new material.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah. I just would have liked something else. Honestly, I think they should have just left the Skywalker saga where it was. And here's another thing. Here, I'm going to get on my soapbox again about Star Wars.
We may have to make this into two episodes tonight.
Yeah, I know. We've been going on Star Wars for like 30 minutes now. I think people give the whole Skywalker thing too much credence. Like, if you think about the story, if you zoom out, it's the story's really about Palpatine, because it starts with his election as Chancellor in Episode 1, and it ends with his death and the destruction of his empire in 6. Like, the Skywalker family is their perspective characters. They are important, but they are the lens through which this story is told. Like, yeah. they are not the main characters. They are perspective characters. It's Palpatine.
Oh.
His journey from being a senator to, you know, the Galactic Emperor. That's what this story is about.
Yeah, I mean, I let me ask you this. In The Revenge of the Sith, after he kills Mace Windu, and he gets all old and everything, they have that huge meeting in that big room, you know what I'm saying? Where he says that he will, like, he'll... Oh, I can't even remember it all.
Yeah, he has, like, an emergency Senate meeting, and that's when he declares himself emperor. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. But how does no one stop him right there? Like, I feel like it's just so obvious. Like, why are the people so stupid?
I think at that point it was a mix of. People that were fully in support of him. I mean, you got to remember, so he just said that the Jedi just attempted a coup on his life. And so people, one, are probably confused because they don't know if the Jedi are good or the Republic is good anymore. So they're probably confused. Two, they're probably scared because he obviously, like, slaughtered all these Jedi and he has the clone army still. And then three, they probably just feel powerless. I mean, you know, Padme's crying and gives that line, like, this is how freedom dies with thunderous applause, or this is how democracy dies, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
like, it was probably a whole lot of, like, well, shoot. You know what I mean? Like, who's going to stop him if the whole Jedi Council couldn't because they just got gutted, you know?
Poor Padme, man.
Yeah.
Poor Padme.
Ugh. Yeah.
And Anakin, they were disgusting and they bugged me so bad, but man, that end of Revenge of the Sith just breaks your heart.
Yeah.
And when Palpatine, like, tells Anakin that he can give the power, like, he can teach him the power to save Padme's life, and, like, Anakin ends up killing her, like, that's so sad.
Yeah. It is, dude. It's tragic. And, you know, I wish the acting was better in those movies. Because when I rewatch them, it is, I get it. I get why people can't stand it and the script is bad. But the story is just so good.
I wish people would, like, focus more on that. Because, like, I'm a big fan of, like Lord of the Rings. Like, everyone thinks that – you've seen Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah, I have.
Everyone thinks that The Fellowship of the Ring is, like, the worst movie just because there's no, like, fight scenes or anything. But I love it just because of, like, the whole movie is, like, a story almost. And that's kind of how The Phantom Menace is to me, at least when they're in Tatooine with Anakin. I don't know. I just think that's kind of really, really cool when Qui-Gon goes into the Midichlorians and things like that. But
yeah, and it's cool stuff. I think that story really needed to be more than three movies, the prequel story. And I think that's why they made the Clone Wars TV series and they put out so many books and video games to kind of bolster it, you know, to give it more substance and shading and color to it.
Have you seen all the Clone Wars?
Yeah. Yeah. It is good. Especially in, like, the first season, it feels a little childish. But probably by season three, I think they realized that it was mostly adults that were watching. And so, dude, it's really good. Like, you might have to struggle a little bit for the first season or two just because it can be a little cheesy. But it's very, very good. And it shows a cool side of Anakin. Because Anakin is much more normal and level-headed, and he's just, like, a legitimate good guy, right? You do see some foreshadowing to his future, but I think the second and third movies happen during, like, the most intense, emotionally stressful times of his life, where he's literally dreaming about his mom being tortured to death or his wife dying, you know? Yeah. And so he's kind of, like, panicked and always freaking out and whiny, right? That's why he's whiny so much, is having dreams about his mom being tortured to death every night, which I think is understandable.
Annie?
Yeah. And, you know, but so the Clone Wars gives a good look at Anakin when he's, like, a little more level-headed. So... yeah, I like it. It's a good series.
All
right. It's really good.
You know who we have to have on again, who's a big Star Wars guy, is Roman.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
He's a big Star Wars guy. Big nerd, and I love it.
Yeah, dude.
Everyone has a nerd inside of them, and those who say they don't like Star Wars, they don't like Lord of the Rings, like, go to hell. Like, if you like Harry Potter, like, you suck. But, like, at least for Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, like, come on. They're so classic.
People that say that they don't like anything like that, you know, that they don't like any science fiction or fantasy, they're just trying to prove something.
Yeah. Like, they're trying to, like, act so cool and tough. And I'm like, we're the tough guys. What are you talking about? Like, we're comfortable with being nerds. I'm completely fine with it. Like, like, you don't... come on, like, Star Wars is magical.
It is, dude. It is. So, I'm going to dedicate my whole summer to reading Star Wars novels just so I can give people a 10-hour lecture on it.
That's so awesome. Oh, God. Alrighty, man. Yeah. And now it's only 5 o'clock at Utah. Like, we usually get done so late. We still have the whole night ahead of us.
Yeah, dude, Yeah, I'm excited. So my girlfriend set up a double date for us tonight, which typically I can't stand. But we actually found a couple that, like, we both click with really well. So yay for me, right?
Yeah, so maybe I can find a girl and we can start double dating.
Dude, that'd be fun, man.
That'd be fun.
you know how rare it is to like find a couple where like the ladies get along well, and then it's like it's a dude that you could see yourself hanging out with, like even outside of the double date. It's like hitting the lottery, man. And so blessed. I feel blessed right now.
Yeah, I've never had that option, but I assume it's good.
Well, it's this is like the 30th couple we've experimented with, and it's, you know, we're finally hitting our stride. So
yeah, I just don't like a lot of people. So we've tried going on double dates, and I'm like, this guy sucks. Like, why is he here?
I'm with you, man. We've literally been out with every single friend that she has, and you know, it's not that I've hated all the dudes. Most of them were like okay, but none of them have been a guy where it's like, yeah, I'd kick it with him on a Friday night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could go over to his house and play Call of Duty till 3 a.m. That never happens. But so I don't know, man. It's grateful. Hashtag blessed, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, anyways.
No, wait. Hold on. Wait. What are you guys doing for your double date?
We're gonna eat pizza and play Cards Against Humanity.
Oh wow, naughty Jordan.
I know, right?
Your dog.
Dude, I love Cards Against Humanity.
I've never played it.
Oh, I am. Dude, I have a very sick sense of humor. I was that kid, you know. I'm not sure people outside of Utah will truly understand this. I mean, maybe it's similar in the Bible Belt. I don't know. But there was, I mean, you know, those kids that you went to high school with where if like anything got a little too intense, they'd bail, like language or anything. Did you know kids like that? Like the goody two shoes kids?
Come on. We live in Utah.
Yeah, dude, there was in my friend group, there was at least two kids were like, because I have a very, very, very crude sense of humor, like very crude. As soon as I'd like approach the group, they'd just bail. Like,
because how I was. I mean, that's like, I would have that sense of humor and people be like, Marshall, stop saying damn.
Yeah, dude. It was, I mean, I was very creative. I love to paint pictures in people's minds with my dirty jokes, and it's pictures that they wish that they'd never see.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you, man. Okay, but we'll be back on Thursday. We got Tito coming on.
Yeah, that's what's up, dude.
Tito. Yeah, we gotta find a second guest too.
Yeah, well.
We may have a very big guest next week.
Yeah. Whoever can. I'm going to auction this off. Whoever can ship me a pallet of Mountain Dew Zero from Costco to my house will be our second guest.
Can we tweet that out?
No, I'm just kidding. But seriously, though, if you do want to be our second guest, just jump in one of our DMs.
Yeah, we'll tweet something out, and we'll have you come on and rant.
Yeah, and if you made it this far in the podcast, you should give yourself a gold star, because we've been talking about nothing for 40 minutes.
This is true. I mean, I love it. I absolutely love it. Okay. But yeah, great. Yeah. Thank you to Brad and Kappa Kane. Great episode. And we will see you guys on Thursday. Go Canes as always. Bye, Jordan.
See you, Marsh.
This has been the Forza Podcast.